You have tuned into an encore presentation of Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening. In case somebody has not been paying attention because they didn't care. So, Washington State, Tim, you want to catch us up on?
The Constitution brings these electors in on a particular date, and they cast their vote state by state by state based upon who won the popular vote in that state. There is this idea of a faithless elector, and a faithless elector is somebody who goes against the tide and votes for somebody that wasn't the popular choice in a particular state. And some states actually have penalties for faithless electors. Washington is one that can assess a penalty against people that don't enact the will of the people in their vote.
Up to $1,000 fine.
Yes.
So what happened on Monday was that four of our electors, and we have how many?
12.
Out of 12, yes. Four of them did not vote the way that they had been tasked to vote and chosen to vote for Hillary Clinton. And prior to that, there was a whole movement of Hamilton electors and others that were asking people to not vote the way that they were representing their states, but it was on the Trump side.
Right. And you had mentioned Hamilton, and Hamilton was the guy, he's the white-wigged guy back in the 1700s or 1800s that imagined that the Electoral College would be a way, a final breaking mechanism against tyranny, against electing somebody with conflicts of interest, electing somebody who may have been influenced by a foreign power, et cetera, et cetera. This election was kind of a test case to see if of his musings about this breaking mechanism were actually
worthwhile,
functional.
If it was
if
a
they're
worthwhile.
Functional.
So Dave, getting back to what you were starting to say.
Well, it was deeply frustrating to me, and this started before the election even happened. There were several Washington electors who said, "We don't think we can vote for Hillary Clinton," and even if we are the deciding votes, we don't think we can vote for Hillary Clinton, which was really, really disappointing and a tremendous cap on what has been an overall pretty disappointing year in the way a lot of people have behaved throughout the primary process on the Democratic side. You know, it was the Washington State delegation that caused a big ruckus while Elijah Cummings and John Lewis were speaking at the National Convention. And I'm really just finally glad that we're over with this and we don't have to put up with that for at least a little while.
I don't think we're actually over it. And my frustration with this is this was a further illustration of what a clunky, ill-designed, idiotic system the Electoral College is across the country. And Washington State's been idiotic on these things before. I mean, back when Ronald Reagan was elected, there was a Ronald Reagan elector that didn't vote for Reagan. I mean, so it's not.
That was 1976, right?
Yeah.
No. I thought it was that he did vote for Reagan when he was supposed to vote for Ford.
Because
it
yes,
was 76,
correct.
Right?
Correct. Yeah,
which
that's
is
right.
Kind of
yeah,
fun
that's
because it was prophetic.
Well, correct. But, you know, what happened here was there was this concept that was roaring around in the intellectual spheres that maybe if the Democratic electors would find somebody reasonable, and in this case it was Republican Colin Powell, and put that forward, that might allow Republican electors in other states to attach to it. The thing that made this kind of idiotic in Washington is our electors were among the last
3 p.m.
to vote. Mm-hmm. Yes, among the last to vote, yeah. In time zone standard, and they knew already that this wasn't going to happen. And so what they did—
Because Trump had already gotten the number he needed to before 3 o'clock.
Correct. And what they did was they simply took away from Hillary Clinton the state that voted maybe most powerfully for her. By a huge margin, the people of Washington wanted to have Hillary Clinton president And these electors denied her. They stripped these electoral votes away from her. So history will say that she actually did far worse. So she not only had to lose, but she had to be further denigrated and destroyed by these Washington electors. It was really kind of an embarrassment, I think, for Washington, because it served no purpose and there was no strategy to it at all.
Why not? I mean, that's, you know, and that's part of what just makes me the craziest about it, is that there isn't an end game here other than a couple people get to stand up and say, look at me.
Right.
And politics is a team sport, and right. It doesn't matter what team you're on. Be on the team, and there's a lot of people involved in politics on every level who just can't get along with others.
Right. And not only that, but not only did Hillary Clinton, she won the popular vote by 3 million votes. Not only does she have to suffer the loss of the presidency, but the people of Washington jammed a thumb in her eye. For no purpose whatsoever.
Okay, I gotta play a little devil's advocate here. So the first, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the first, before Trump had even won the vote on Election Day, Bob Satyakum, who's the former Puyallup tribal leader, had already declared he was not going to vote for Hillary. I believe he was the first elector in the country to say that.
He was, and he was
You had your thing. So he said he was not going to, way before we ever thought we were going to be in this position. And I think he was speaking for, rightly or wrongly, with the college, a group of people across the country who did not feel that Hillary Clinton had won legitimately, rightly or wrongly.
You mean the Democratic nomination?
The Democratic nomination, that she had not legitimately won, rightly or wrongly. He had already taken that stand. And so what's interesting to me is using that as a platform. I think you're both right that maybe that's not cool, especially in this situation, especially when the reason to do it was to forestall a Trump election.
He was completely consistent throughout. And he declared early on that he wouldn't do it. He's one of the four that didn't. He voted for somebody entirely different. He voted for a Native American.
Faith spotted eagle.
Correct. And, you know, bless him. Fine. That's great. But the three that stole Hillary Clinton's electoral votes from Washington, the other three, they threw them on, these are Democrats, and they threw them on to Republican Colin Powell. And I don't really have any issue at all with Colin Powell. I think he's actually a very reasonable person. But they did it in some gambit that other people around the country, other electors around the country, would also throw in with Colin Powell and deny Trump. And it was... It's ridiculous, because not only wasn't it not going to happen, but they already had the information and evidence that it wasn't happening at all. Yep. Because of the time zone difference. We're out on the West Coast.
And there's very few Republican leaders with a national profile I can point to that are further outside the Trump coalition and the modern Republican Party than Colin Powell.
Correct.
He is a Republican from an entirely different era, and I don't think he'd even want the job.
No, but the point was, if enough electors did not cast their vote for Trump, regardless if they pick Kasich or whatever, if he didn't get to that magic number, it would fall to Congress,
they
which is a
knew.
Whole other issue. But wait, but what you're talking about, Tim, is something that I think is a huge core issue in politics. Do you follow strategy or do you follow ideology? And I totally hear you. I've been a party member. I've been an elected party official. I get the strategy side. I fall on the strategy side. But I have to make an argument that if people really are taking their job, like, this is what I believe is the right thing to do, maybe they should still do that regardless of the strategy,
because they're
being true to what they think the Electoral College is.
Well, I think you are misunderstanding how these electors are selected to begin with. They are selected as party animals.
No, I'm they're not misunderstanding
selected,
that at all.
They're
I've done
selected.
It. I've been
right,
one of the people who selected
right,
people.
But they are selected By parties, they are in they are supposed to do their duty, and in fact, Washington law says that if they do not do their duty, then penalties will be assigned to them if they do not do their duty. Now, it would be one thing if these electors said that, you know, maybe it would be one thing if these electors said, "Well, we want to vote for Bernie Sanders because we want to support," but these Democrats supported a Republican, and they did so on some gambit that was already unraveling, and they understood it was unraveling as they cast their vote.
Well, don't confuse disagreement with misunderstanding, because I think that there's been a huge conversation in this nation about the Electoral College and what it's supposed to do. And nobody knows exactly what was in their minds, but I think an argument can be made that they believed that that's what they were upholding, was this idea of not casting a vote for somebody who, it can be clearly argued, does not have the qualifications to be president.
Well, I guess my opinion about the Electoral College is it was sold to the American public as cornflakes. The American public opens the box. It doesn't have cornflakes. They do it again. Doesn't have cornflakes. They do it again. Doesn't have cornflakes. They do it like, you know, how many elections? 55 elections. It doesn't have cornflakes in it. After a while, you have to conclude that maybe the Electoral College isn't about cornflakes, that maybe it's about something else entirely. And that is, I think, the essential problem with the Electoral College. We can talk about the arcane problem with it, but the main problem is that it folds in all of the disproportionate problems with the United States Senate into the Electoral College and exacerbates it. And it's we in the populated states should be outraged that our votes are diluted through this mechanism that was created during the slave state portion of the United States.
Which is an ongoing conversation about what does this country do now.
It has, its pedigree is the same pedigree as the three-fifths rule of the Constitution.
And Dave, do you want to get a last word in on this before we move on?
I just want to say this gave Doug Erickson, our 42nd state senator, the opportunity to, you know, get quotes into magazines and, you know, point out how ridiculous and out of touch the whole thing looked and was.
Okay, and we're going to talk more about Doug Erickson in just a moment. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cascadia News Now.
Women's Spirit Coalition, eliminating violence against Native women and promoting the well-being of Native families and communities. We envision a nation where Native women live safely and where Women's Spirit Coalition is the leader in ending violence against Native women. You can find us on Facebook at Women's Spirit Coalition or online at womensspirit.net.
And you are listening to Cascadia News Now with your hosts, Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, and me, Stephanie Contours. We just mentioned our state senator from the 42nd, Doug Erickson, and there have been in the political pundit circles some rumors flying about. Now, you must have been under a rock if you didn't know that he was instrumental in bringing Trump here during his campaign, one of the only places that was an absolute blue state that he brought Trump to Lyndon, and was pretty connected with the campaign. There's some rumors flying around about him.
Well, yes, he was a captain of the Trump campaign in Washington. He was very bold and blunt and direct, and he was instrumental in bringing Trump here and promoting Trump in Washington, and I think I think Doug probably would say that having Trump president is its own reward, but sometimes when you do things like that, you might expect a reward, and
a lot of times.
My understanding, and the rumor mill is, and we're just talking gossip here because nothing's confirmed.
Let's qualify.
But my understanding is that there may be a post for Doug Erickson with the Environmental Protection Agency district out of Seattle. And if so, it's a big move upward for him. If it's offered to him, he could jump on it. And that would leave a vacancy in the Senate position in the 42nd district.
And he had run against Laos before to be county executive, which is the equivalent of mayor of the county, which pays more, and you don't have to travel, as you were saying to me earlier. So I feel like the fact that Erickson ran and lost against Laos sort of indicates that he might like to be in a different, more permanent position.
Yeah, I think being a representative in Olympia means a lot of travel time. There's not a lot of glory. There's not a lot of reward. And it might be a stepping stone. Not everybody, but for some people, it's a stepping stone to something else. And I think you're right. I think when Doug ran for county executive, it showed that maybe he had some itch to do something else with his talent. And so if a position—
Which, to be fair, is wherever you stand is considerable. I mean, he's been— In his terms of, or his people's terms of success, I think you can make an argument.
Well, I'm making faces over here because I don't agree with that
he
necessarily.
He is making faces.
I'm making faces, but I don't agree with that necessarily. But what I do think is that if an opportunity came in the Trump administration for Doug to do something more magnificent for the Trump administration, not only would he be rewarded for doing that, he would be well served within that administration to do it. So if an opportunity, in other words, if the hand is put out, I would not be at surprise at all that he takes that hand and moves into a new and better administrative position.
And he was on the Environment Committee in the state legislature.
Correct.
With Kevin Rinker, which was fun to watch.
Which was fun to watch. He's been very— I don't know. Well, I don't want to make the words clever sound odd, because I mean it sincerely. He's been very clever about getting himself onto very influential committees and commissions with the state and making himself a central player. He has very good political instincts, and I think he would well serve the Trump administration.
So it'll be interesting to see with Doug Erickson if he gets a position. Speaking of some of our other representatives, Luann Van Werven just put out a press release about an hour ago saying that she is now the ranking Republican on higher education.
Right.
And so what might that mean for us in higher education?
Before we move off that topic of Doug, the big question is what does that mean politically for Whatcom County? And what's interesting is, I'll just very quickly go over the mechanic of this. The Republicans get to nominate three people as potential to replace him as senator, and county council selects one of those three.
It will not be a special election.
That person will actually serve for a limited time, mm-hmm. and they will come up on a new election cycle. But it's an interesting dynamic because the Republicans get to choose the constellation of candidates.
Right.
And the constellation of candidates is interesting because they probably would include Luann. And they probably would include Vincent Baez as well.
They probably both want to move up. So, Dave, what do you think about Luann and higher education?
I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, I gotta say, I don't. And this is a different show, but I don't have high hopes for the legislature this year.
Well, we can talk about it. I mean, we want to look ahead to 2017 anyway. So
yeah, I think the way the legislature is broken down right now. And the political climate we find ourselves in the state and nationally, I think that this is going to be a hot year where there's a lot of smoke, but not a lot of fire.
You know, I guess I feel much more pessimistic about that appointment than you do, Dave. And the reason I feel pessimistic is Luann is very much in the same realm as Trump's nominee to head the Department of Education, Betsy DeVos.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them are heavy advocates of charter schools. What charter schools basically means, in my mind, is the gutting of funding for public schools. It's basically surrendering and giving up on the public school model that has been the model of education for this country for 100 years, and assigning that over to a for-profit model. I think that she will be in that position, she will be a great champion of Betsy DeVos. But I don't necessarily think that that is going to be a wonderful model for the school children of the nation. I mean, basically what this amounts to is you get under their model, you get a voucher. You get a voucher that pays essentially about half the cost of going to a really good school and, you know, and pays none of the costs of going to a poor school.
And so, to be fair, I think not being a parent in the room, but I can imagine being very concerned about the state of public schools, the state of how many students are in a classroom, and thinking about, hey, I want this voucher because I want my child to have the best education.
Right.
I mean, there's an argument to be made for
no,
that.
No, there isn't, because, and I'll tell you why.
Yes, there is.
I'll tell you why there's not an argument. Because a lot of people in the state are going to get a check that cannot be cashed.
Because it's unfunded.
Because it doesn't – this check – doesn't allow their child into a better school, and so it's uncashable. It does cut the costs of people that are wealthy. It does do that, but it does not. I don't think our public schools are hell holes, but I think under this model they might become hell holes, and so you get a check that is uncashable, and you are compelled then to send your child to some substandard school. I disagree.
I didn't say that was my argument. I'm absolutely against charter schools, but I think that it's very understandable. What I'm saying is it's understandable why a parent wants one, especially when our schools are not getting the funding they're supposed to get, constitutionally, We're not sure we're going to talk about more of that next week, but I think it's an issue where it is a little scary to think about what she might do as the ranking Republican.
Well,
I agree.
Parents, you know, they're wishful. Every parent wants the absolute pinnacle for their child. They do. One of the compromises our society has made is that we have a public school system that treats all children equally. And now you're going to create an unequal school system. In my mind, it's not good for democracy.
And I agree with you. I think looking at Luann Van Werven, it's going to be interesting because I think this state has moved toward charter schools because of the image that I'm talking about.
Correct.
And that's what I'm saying is that if I'm a parent and it doesn't look like public schools are doing well and we lose rankings and we are not getting the funding that is constitutionally mandated, well, then the only thing that I see is my kid's going to graduate before this gets resolved.
Correct. And the idea then is because we can't save the sinking ship of schools, we scuttle it and we move to a different ship. But some people get to move on to a cruise ship, and some people get to move on to a barge.
Right.
And you see this all over in all sorts of different issues. There's the Lenin called accelerating the contradictions. If we just make capitalism bad enough, the revolution will come, and everything will be great. And it just never pans out that way.
Well, and in some ways, it sort of ties back into the conversation we had about electors, is that there are people who are looking at this, looking at charter schools, looking at education and the whole concept of education from very different angles. I think I can speak for the table to say that we probably all side more on the communal model of raising the least of us, raising the least of our children is the best for our state and our country. I'm just speaking to understanding that there are people who are like, yeah, but my child, you know, right? And it's not fair that there is already a system when some people can say, well, the public school system isn't good enough for my child if they can afford to pay for private school. And so you can make the argument that, oh, but charter schools equalize that so not just the rich can pull their kids up.
But I want to fight with you about this on a future show, Stephanie, because the national testing shows that Washington students are doing really well. Things are going on an upward trend for public education nationally. And you don't fix what's not broken, and you don't scuttle what's in kind of foundational, I think. The model is that it's a great melt. I mean, we talk about a melting pot in this country. Nothing could be more of a melting pot than public schools, where all people get to rub elbows together, all children get to know their neighbors, get to experience their neighbors. It's not elitist in any sense, and it is the great, maybe the great equalizer of a democratic society, that we all get to experience one another in a public model.
Here's Tim. I want to argue with you about this on a future show. I see what you did there, Tim. Well, what I want to say is I absolutely think that this is crucial. And I think regardless of what any individual does with their child, saving our public schools is crucial. I don't think anybody can step to me and make an argument against shoring up our public schools. What I'm saying is, if we're going to, as a state, have this conversation, and if Lou Anne Van Werven from our own 42nd is the ranking Republican on this committee, if we approach this conversation without having understanding of why charter schools are so popular in this state, then we won't ever, like, if you and I sit in this room and argue back and forth, we're not getting anywhere.
Right. But let's talk about Jay Inslee and what he wants to do next week.
Yes, exactly. That's a great segue. You should tune in next week, because there might be a saving plan for education in Washington State, and you should tune in next week. But we do have a few minutes left. We were going to talk about a whole bunch of local things, which we're going to have to wait on. And I'm going to throw it to Dave. We're going to talk a little bit about something that you personally witnessed happened this week in Bellingham.
Yeah, I'm sure people saw in the Herald, and I haven't seen the video attached to the article, and it might have my behind in it at the very end when the camera was flipping around. But out on Cornwall, right outside the Stone Moon, there was a massive RV fire last Thursday morning, and Bellingham Fire Department responded very quickly. They were right on top of it, headed out instantly. The gentleman whose RV it was had been recently homeless, had just recently got it and told the VA he didn't need help anymore. And he's now being taken care of by the Opportunity Council. And I really wanted to thank the Bellingham Fire Department and the Opportunity Council for their response to this and for doing a very good job. And I think Opportunity Council does a good job with very limited resources. And I will have more specifics on that for our Facebook page in the future.
You know, I just quickly, very quickly, wanted to say that I got to know the firefighters during the EMS levee that unfolded in the fall, and they are an excellent and very professional. They are fabulous. It's an asset to Bellingham to have such dedicated, great people working.
Mm-hmm. And so what you were just saying is they worked with the Opportunity Council to very quickly to work on this situation.
I was very impressed with everyone involved.
Thank you, Fire Department. Thank you, Opportunity Council. And I think that it touches on a much larger issue of homelessness, which we will get to on another show, and maybe Tim and I will go to bat about that issue. But that does pretty much wrap it up for us at Cascadia News Now. And I want to thank my co-host, Tim Johnson, and Dave Willingham. I'm Stephanie Contouris. A very special thank you to our engineer, Brooks Collins. Thank you so much, Brooks. We are going to be listening next week to some more discussion about our local politics and what to expect in 2017. The big, big county and Bellingham issues, the jail will probably come up, and water wells. And I want to say happy Yule and happy solstice, because this is Solstice Day. We're going to go out with the Weird Sisters and Solstice Carol. And you are listening to KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham.
A fire is burning, the long night draws near. All who need comfort are welcome by here. We'll dance neath the stars and toast a past year, for the spirit of solstice is still living here. We'll count all our blessings while the mother lays down with snow as her blanket covering the ground. Thanks to the mother for the life that she brings. She'll waken to warm us again in the spring. The poor and the hungry, the sick and the lost, these are our children, no matter the cost. Come by the fire, the harvest to share, for the spirit of solstice is still living here.